In the book of Judges, we're looking at all the judges. We won't be doing the entire book, but we're looking at the judges. And Samson is our final one. And I'm reluctant to leave, so Samson gets four messages. Next week will be the final one, but today we're looking at probably the most famous story about Samson, that is Samson and Delilah. I'm not going to read the entire chapter, but we'll read some as we go along, as we normally do. Satan appears in the Bible reading for last week. If you were reading through the Bible and the system we offered, you'll find that you were in Job talking about Satan. By the way, if you aren't, we still have more of those guides on the back, and we can get more if we need them. But in any case, Job was there, and Job comes before God along with the other angels. God asked Job a question. Where have you been? Where have you been, Job? Not that he doesn't know, but he wants to hear it from Job, from Satan. And Satan answers, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking back and forth in it. Then chapter 2, they come back, and the Lord asks the same question and gets the same answer. From going to and fro in the earth and from walking back and forth in it. Now, God didn't ask him what he was doing, just asked him where he'd been. We learn, though, from Peter, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, that we know what he's doing. It says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, another name for Satan, walks about seeking whom he may devour as a roaring lion. He's after us. He is bringing temptation. Now, it's true that he uses demons. Satan does not go everywhere. He can only be one place at one time. But he uses his demons to help him along. And guess what? Sometimes he uses us. The temptation is not from Satan at all. James tells us it comes out of your own lusts. And we are tempted that way. So Satan is behind it all. And today, we're going to look at the most temptation-saturated periods of history. You just cannot. And I said to myself when I read that somewhere, I said, wait a minute. It was pretty bad in Greece. They had temple prostitutes. If you want to please God, go into the prostitute. That's pretty tempting, you know. Well, that's true, but you had to go to the temple to do it. Now, just stay home, your little laptop, and there you go. You know? All kinds of things around. So it comes out, and one person said, everything from soft drinks to tires are sold by sex. It's there. It's all over the place. Satan is working on overtime on us. He also worked overtime on Samson. Now, this passage about Samson and Delilah, but the first three verses in chapter 16 prepare us for that subject. Samson went down to Gaza and saw a harlot there and went in to her. This incident tells us about at least two things about Samson. Samson, it explains this condemnation that he has in Delilah. First, he visited the harlot in Gaza. That tells us Samson was a sex addict. He had this big problem, and it wasn't too hard to see. And when the men of the city learned of his presence there, they made a plan to capture him. Oh, this is our chance to get Samson. And so they make a plan. And here it is in verse 2 of chapter 16 of Judges. When the Gazites were told Samson came here, they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city. Now, they don't mean by the right in the gate, but the gate was a large place where people gathered. They were there, and they in the gate of the city. They were quiet all night, saying, in the morning, when it is daylight, we will kill him. And Samson lay low until midnight, and then he rose up midnight, took hold of the doors of the gate of the city, and the two gate posts, pulled them up, bar and all, and put them on his shoulders, and carried them to the top of the hill which faces Hebron. Now, that's a feat of strength. he put on display here, and this is the second thing we learned from this, that Samson had great confidence in his strength. But we also remember, pride goes before a fall. I am strong, says Samson. I can do anything. Nobody can take can get me. Well, he's fooled again. He fooled them, and they're going to fool him. He pulls up the gateposts, bar and all, he says. And he puts them up there on big display. Anybody could see it. Oh, look what Samson did. Well, this is probably the greatest display of strength in all of human history. I don't know any place, any other human strength, one person did such a thing. And no one could miss it. Now, we want to talk about the importance of Samson's defeat. How important was it to these Philistines to defeat Samson? Well, here's what it says. And afterward it happened that he loved a woman, this is verse 4, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, entice him, find out where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him and afflict him, that every one of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. Now, they probably thought that he had some kind of magic power. It's some kind of a thing, maybe it's something he was wearing around his neck that made him the powerful man that he is. Or maybe it was something like kryptonite. If I can just find out what that is, we'll get him. You know? Well, that's what they're after her. They want her to do for them. Now, I'm going to stop here in the story and say something that I don't want you to misunderstand. But I think that it seems like to me that it was missed by many of the commentaries. And this is it. The sin which is condemned in Judges 16 is not the sin of adultery. It's not a sexual sin that is condemned here. Now, it's the sin of the believer allowing any physical passion, to come between him and God. Peter reminds us that the corruption that is in the world is through lust. It started through lust in Genesis 3, when Eve and then Adam longed for the fruit that God said don't take, so that they could be like God. It's a passion that they had to be like God, and so it started there, and then it's fed through lust, as it's pictured in Samson and in us. If we're not careful. And it's overcome if we partake of the divine nature by taking hold of the exceeding great and precious promises. Now, so I go through this, lest somebody here might say, well, that's not my problem. Sexual sin is not my problem. I can just ignore the lesson of Samson. No. Listen to what it says about what Samson did. It really had nothing to do with sex. It was putting something in between himself and God. Now, back to the story. The importance of Samson's defeat. Now, the importance is shown by the price that they offered. It was important enough to them that they would pay 1,100 pieces of silver. I read somewhere that they said, oh, that's about $5,000. How do you know? You're not listening. 1,100 pieces. Every one of us, the lords of the Philistines, will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. How can you figure that out until you know how many everys there are? You know, so, I don't know. There may have been five because there were five major cities in Philistia, and so maybe it was five, so it would be 5,500 pieces of silver. In any case, we don't know how much it was. I'll settle for this. It's a super sum of silver. That's all I know. But it was enough to secure Delilah's help. So that's the price offered. but also the people who offered it. It was the lords of the Philistines. They are mentioned five times in the passage. It's the lords of the Philistines, the leaders of the Philistines, who are wanting to get this man. That's how important it was. So it's very important for them. So that's the importance. Now, the instruction. The instruction for Samson's defeat. They said, let me see what he said. Right, here it said. They said, entice him. Find out where his great strength lies, by which means we may overpower him, that we may bind him and afflict him. Now, that's what they want. That's her job. And so she begins on the work. She says, okay, I'll do whatever you say. Now, notice what she does. She said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and with what you may be bound to afflict you. Do you hear what she said? To afflict you. She's telling him, now tell me what you have to do, what we have to do, in order to bind you and afflict you. And he goes along with this thing. Crazy. Anyway, and Samson said to her, if they bind me with seven fresh bowstrings, not yet dried, then I shall become weak and be like other men. He's lying his head off. But that's what he said to her. And so the lords of the Philistines brought up seven fresh bowstrings, not yet dried, and she bound him with them. And then the men were lying in wait, staying with her in the room. They're hiding behind a curtain somewhere, you know. What a strange people. And so she said to them, to him, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. But he broke the bowstrings like strands of yarn breaks when it touches fire. So the secret of his strength was not known. Now, do you wonder, not in the text, but do you wonder what Samson did to them? They're in the room. They're going to try to afflict him. He breaks the strength. Don't you think he whooped up on them? I think he must have. And maybe had to get a new crew next time. But this is the way the story goes. Then she says the same thing. Seven new ropes this time. You know, the men of Judah, in 15:13, the men of Judah bound Samson and took him to the Philistines with new ropes, is what it says. And when he got there, he broke them. And they didn't notice that somehow. And so Delilah asked him again, now look, you mocked me and told me lies. Now, please, tell me what you may be bound with. And he said to her, if they bind me securely with new ropes and have never been used, then I shall become weak and be like other men. Now, therefore, Delilah took the new ropes, bound him with them, and then said to him, the Philistines are upon you. And the men were lying in wait, staying in the room, but he broke them off his arms like thread. Again, what did he do to them? I don't know. Then the third thing he says is, if you weave the locks of my hair into a loom, I don't understand that at all. Just weave them into the loom. And then so she did it. She wove them in the room, and the batten of the loom, and said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. But he awoke from his sleep and pulled out the batten and the web from the loom, and again, it was wrong. Now, the implications of Samson's defeat we find in verses 15 and 16. First of all, he compromised his convictions. He wasn't supposed to be talking to her. He wasn't supposed to be there at all. And so his convictions were, I am fighting for Israel. But he's playing around with this. And so he's compromising his convictions. And then she finally said to him, how can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these three times and have not told me where your great strength lies. See, Samson had heard this one before. Remember that? Last Sunday, I believe. Said when his wife, the Timnite, she said, you hate me. You don't love me. If you did, you'd tell me about the riddle, remember? And he told her, and they learned the riddle. So he compromised his convictions. He also lusted away his logic, verse 16. It came to pass when she pestered him daily with her words and pressed him, so that his soul was vexed to death, that he told her all his heart and said, see, she nagged him every time he saw her, whether it was in the house, in the yard, wherever it was, tell me now, oh, you're going to tell me now, tell me. And he knew what she was after in the first place. She didn't mince words with him. We want to afflict you. He knew that. And he thought it was a game. I think he was running a game here anyway. He was trying to, you know, he liked riddles. We saw that. And I think that what he was doing, he was saying, I'll give you just a little piece of information. You know, give me a hint. Well, he gave her a hint. Each time, he gave her a hint. Remember that? Look back a minute. The different things that she said. First of all, he said, seven fresh bowstrings. Now we have seven. That's one clue. Seven. And then the next time he says, seven new ropes. Well, the seven is there, but new, never used before, something never done before. That's another clue. Then we have the locks of my head. Oh, now we're getting it into the hair. So he said, first of all, seven. His hair had seven locks. Seven, and then new, something never happened before. And now it has to do with my hair. You're getting closer. He's playing around with the things of God. So she was playing. He was playing a game, giving parts of the riddle. John Wesley, I did a paper on him one time, and it was really amazing what I learned about him. John Wesley, his entire life was a quest for holiness. He even had, you know, he was the head of Methodism from the Church of England, and he had holy clubs. The people met together to become more holy, and they prayed and so forth. That was Wesley. And Wesley said, when I'm tempted, I flee to a crowd. I like that. You know, there's a lot of things that you can't do in a crowd. So if something happened, I'm tempted to do this, flee to a crowd. Well, I like that. But that's why God said through the Apostle Paul, flee youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. In Proverbs, we read Proverbs 4, 14 and 15. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it. Pass on. And then the first Sunday of this year, we heard from Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinner, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. His delight is in the law of the Lord, and in the law does he meditate day and night. So there are ways in which we follow the teaching of Scripture to stay away from this temptation. I think temptation is like a woodpecker. You ever see a woodpecker? Pop, 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 pop. Just keep right up. Pop, 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 pop. I used to walk. I always walk. And way back, I used to walk in a place that had metal telephone poles. One day, as I was walking, I heard, ding, 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 ding. He was banging on that metal pole. And I thought, well, he'll soon get tired of that. And everywhere I went, there was some ding, 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 ding. Every morning, ding, 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 ding. Just keeps on going. That's what temptation does. Even when we say, I'm standing away from that, here it comes, ding, 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 ding. Even when you're the metal, it's there. So he's saying the temptation will come all the time. He keeps at it. So we've had the importance of Samson's defeat, the instruction, the implication, and now the indication of Samson's defeat. See, he lost the revelation of his strength, verses 17 and 18. The strength and the purpose of it was given to him in the revelation. So he lost that revelation. He told her all his heart. He said to her, "No razor has ever come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I am shaven, then all my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man." See, there it is. It's seven. It's new. Something never happened before. And it's my hair. Shave my hair. Something that never happened before. So now Delilah has his secret. She would never have known this because she was a Philistine. He should never have been with her. She was the enemy. So Samson's secret now is gone. He lost it. If he hadn't been hanging around the enemy, then it never would have happened. And then verse 18 says, when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, I don't know how she knew, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, "Come up once more, for he has told me all his heart." So the lords of the Philistines came up to her, brought the money in their hand. And if you wonder why they believed her, you wonder why she believed him. Now, so he lost the revelation of his strength, but he also lost the reservoir of his strength. She lulled him to sleep on her knees, called for a man and had him shave off the locks of his hair, and then she began to torment him, and his strength left him. Apparently, the man also bound him, and there he is, bound, his head shaved, and so we conclude from here. No, we should not conclude from here that Samson's strength was in his hair. It wasn't in his hair. Samson's strength was in his God. His connection with his God was his vow. And the sign of the vow was his hair. Samson's hair was the key, but that was not where his strength lay. His strength lay in his God. When his hair was cut, the vow was broken. The connection with God was broken, and his strength was gone. That's the revelation and the reservoir of his strength. Now, he also lost the realization of his strength. 20 and 21. And she said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." So he woke up from his sleep and said, "I will go out as before at other times and shake myself free." You know, it's sad that his strength is gone. And it's sad that the Lord has departed from him. But what is sadder still is that he doesn't even realize it. He didn't know that the Lord had departed from him. This reminds me of Jesus' story about him in Luke chapter 3, verse 43. When they had finished the days as they returned, they went to Jerusalem, remember, and they finished the days, the boy Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother did not know it. But supposing him to have been in the company, they went a day's journey and sought him among their relatives and acquaintances. Now, does that ring a bell? Do you sometimes say, "Oh, well, maybe I don't feel too much, like maybe Jesus is not with me, but I'm sure he's with somebody around here." You know? The acquaintances, the relatives, the friends, the members, he must be here somewhere. So we play too close to sin. We play with sin. We fall into sin. But we keep doing our service. We think nobody knows. And we don't know that the Lord is not with us. We assume he's with somewhere, but where? It's not his work that we're doing then. It's our own work, not his. Now, so we've seen the importance of Samson's defeat, the instructions, the implications, and the indications. Now, they took him prisoner, and they put his eyes out, made him grind at the mill like a woman's work, the big old Samson doing the work of a woman. Well, what can we do? How can we keep this from happening to us? We don't have to have temptation. Well, then why do we? Why do we have to do this? Well, James tells us, James says this, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. And let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." God puts us through the temptations so that when we come out at the other end, we are perfect, complete, lacking nothing. We need this. We need the temptation in our lives, but we need to depend upon the Lord in the process. Now, there are three principles of concerning temptation. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, you know the verse well. This will help us to know not to be victims of temptation, but to be victors over it. Remember, temptation is not sin. Just because you're tempted doesn't mean you sinned. And we shouldn't be reticent to talk about it, to tell people about it. I have been tempted. We don't need to make a big headline, but we should not think that being tempted caused is sin itself. See, temptation is, someone said, temptation is the sin peeping through the keyhole. And sin is yielding to it, is opening the door wide. Well, that's true. But 1 Corinthians 10:13 gives us three things. First, it says temptation is common. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. See, you're not being singled out. Oh, I'm being tempted. Nobody else is tempted, just me. No, not true. It's common to man. The things that happen are common to other people. Some people may be more victorious than you are, and you don't notice it. They've overcome. Don't let that fool you. They have temptations also. Others may be good at hiding things. But temptation comes to all of us. And if you think if this is all new to you, welcome to the club. Welcome to the temptation club, because we all are in it. Now, the temptation is common, but the extent of temptation is controlled. God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able. See, he remembers our frame. He knows that we are dust. He knows what we need. And so he will not let the temptation get out of hand. He is in control of it. And then, the third, the escape of temptation is certain. But with the temptation, he will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. The way of escape is there. And when we yield to the temptation, the problem is, most often, that we have not looked for the escape. We're enjoying the temptation. We're allowing ourselves to revel in the temptation, thinking, oh, it won't go that far, and all of a sudden it went that far, and you're gone. Well, he says the temptation will have a way of escape, and we'll be able to bear it. So, if that place brings temptation, don't go there. If that person is a temptation, don't go there. Or don't be with that person in places where the temptation can be yielded to. Temptation is not bad. Sin, yielding to the temptation, is bad.